Side 3, Cujo. Continuing on page 75. On the other side, Ronnie Dubay did the same. He reached the passenger door and fumbled at the latch for an endless moment. He clawed at it. He could still hear that low growling, so much like an idling Evinrude 80-horsepower motor. The door wouldn't open. He waited for the dog to pull a chunk of his ass off. At last, his thumb found the button, the door opened, and he scrambled into the cab, panting. He looked in the rearview mirror, bolted outside his window, and saw the dog standing in the open barn door, motionless. He looked over at Joe, who was sitting behind the wheel and grinning at him sheepishly. Ronnie offered his own shaky grin in return. "Just a dog," Ronnie said. "Yeah, barks worse than his bite." "Right, let's go back in there and screw around with that chainfall some more." "Fuck you," Joe said. "And the horse you rode in on." They laughed together. Ronnie passed him a smoke. "What do you say we get going?" "I'm your guy," Joe said, and started the truck. Halfway back to Portland, Ronnie said almost to himself, "The dog's going bad." Joe was driving with his elbow cocked out the window. He glanced over at Ronnie. "I was scared, and I don't mind saying so. One of those little dogs gives me shit in a situation like that. With nobody home, I'd just as soon kick in the balls, you know? I mean, if people don't chain up a dog that bites, they deserve what they get, you know? That thing, did you see it? I bet that mother humper went 200 pounds. "Maybe I ought to give Joe Camber a call," Ronnie said. "Tell him what happened. Might save him getting his arm chewed off. What do you think?" "What's Joe Camber done for you lately?" Joe Magruder asked with a grin. Ronnie nodded thoughtfully. "He don't blow me like you do, that's true." "Last blow job I had was from your wife. Wasn't half bad either." "Get bent, you fairy." They laughed together. Nobody called Joe Camber. When they got back to Portland Machine, it was near knocking off time, screwing around time. They took 15 minutes riding the trip up. Belasco came out back and asked them if Camber had been there to take delivery. Ronnie Dubay said sure. Belasco, who was a prick of the highest order, went away. Joe Magruder told Ronnie to have a nice weekend and a happy fucking Fourth. Ronnie said he planned to get in the bag and stay that way until Sunday night. They clocked out. Neither of them thought about Cujo again until they read about him in the paper. Vic spent most of that afternoon before the long weekend going over the details of the trip with Roger. Roger was so careful about details that he was almost paranoid. He had made the plane and hotel reservations through an agency. Their flight to Boston would leave Portland Jetport at 7:10 a.m. Monday. Vic said he would pick Roger up in the Jag at 5:30. He thought that was unnecessarily early, but he knew Roger and Roger's little tics. They talked generally about the trip, consciously avoiding specifics. Vic kept his coffee break ideas to himself, and the napkin stowed safely away in his sport jacket pocket. Roger would be more receptive when they were away. Vic thought about leaving early and decided to go back and check the afternoon mail first. Lisa, their secretary, had already left for the day, getting a jump on the holiday weekend. Hell, you couldn't get a secretary to stay until the stroke of five anymore, holiday weekend or not. As far as Vic was concerned, it was just another sign of the continuing decay of Western Civ. Probably at this very moment, Lisa, who was beautiful, just 21, and almost totally breastless, was entering the interstate flow of traffic, bound south to Old Orchard or the Hamptons, dressed in tight jeans and a nothing halter. "Get down, Disco Lisa," Vic thought, and grinned a little. There was a single, unopened letter on his desk blotter. He picked it up curiously, noting first the word "personal" printed below the address, and second the fact that his address had been printed in solid caps. He held it, turning it over in his hands, feeling a vague thread of disquiet slip into what was a general mood of tired well-being. Far back in his mind, hardly even acknowledged, was a sudden urge to rip the letter into halves, fourths, eighths, and then toss the pieces into the wastebasket. Instead, he tore it open and pulled out a single sheet of paper. More block letters. The simple message, six sentences, hit him like a straight shot just below the heart. He did not so much sit in his chair as collapse into it. A little grunt escaped him, the sound of a man who has suddenly lost all his wind. His mind roared with nothing but white noise for a length of time he couldn't understand or comprehend. If Roger had come in just then, he likely would have thought Vic was having a heart attack. In a way, he was. His face was paper white. His mouth hung open. Bluish half-moons had appeared under his eyes. He read the message again. And then again. At first, his eyes were drawn to the first interrogative. What's that mole just above her pubic hair look like to you? It's a mistake, he thought confusedly. No one knows about that but me, well, her mother and her father. Then, hurt, he felt the first splinters of jealousy. Even her bikini covers that, her little bikini. He ran a hand through his hair. He put the letter down and ran both hands through his hair. That punched, gasping feeling was still there in his chest, the feeling that his heart was pumping air instead of blood. He felt fright and pain and confusion. But of the three, the dominant feeling, the overriding emotion, was terrible fright. The letter glared up at him and shouted, I enjoyed fucking the shit out of her. Now it was this line his eyes fixed upon, not wanting to leave. He could hear the drone of a plane in the sky outside, leaving the jetport, heading up, heading out, making for points unknown. And he thought, I enjoyed fucking the shit out of her. Crude. That's crude. Yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. Yes, indeedy. It was the hack of a blunt knife. Fucking the shit out of her. What an image that made. Nothing fancy about it. It was like getting a splash in the eyes from a squirt gun loaded up with battery acid. He tried hard to think coherently and... I enjoyed... Just couldn't... Fucking the shit out of her. Do it. Now his eyes went to the last line, and that was the one he read over and over again, as if trying to cram the sense of it somehow into his brain. That huge feeling of fright kept getting in the way. Do you have any questions? Yes, all of a sudden he had all kinds of questions. The only thing was he didn't seem to want answers to any of them. A new thought crossed his mind. What if Roger hadn't gone home? Often he poked his head into Vic's office before leaving if there was a light on. He might be even more likely to do so tonight with the trip pending. The thought made Vic feel panicky. And an absurd memory surfaced. All those times he had spent masturbating in the bathroom as a teenager, unable to help himself but terribly afraid everyone must know exactly what he was up to in there. If Roger came in, he would see something was wrong. He didn't want that. He got up and went to the window, which looked down 6 stories to the parking lot which served the building. Roger's bright yellow Honda Civic was gone from its space. He had gone home. Pulled out of himself, Vic listened. The offices of AdWorks were totally silent. There was that resonating quiet that seems the sole property of business quarters after hours. There was not even the sound of old Mr. Stiegmeier, the custodian, rattling around. He would have to sign out in the lobby. He would have to... Now there was a sound. At first he didn't know what it was. It came to him in a moment. It was whimpering. The sound of an animal with a smashed foot. Still looking out the window, he saw the cars left in the parking lot double, then treble, through a film of tears. Why couldn't he get mad? Why did he have to be so fucking scared? An absurd, antique word came to mind. Jilted, he thought. I've been jilted. The whimpering sounds kept coming. He tried to lock his throat, and it did no good. He lowered his head and gripped the convector grill that ran below the window at waist height. Gripped it until his fingers hurt, until the metal creaked and protested. How long had it been since he had cried? He had cried the night Tad was born, but that had been relief.